Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. We're broadcasting live one last time from Denver's Pepsi Center, where the tent is coming down today on the Democratic National Convention. Tonight, it's Barack Obama in the big stadium next door. Last night, it was Joe Biden and Bill Clinton arguing that America needs Barack Obama, and so does the world. Delegate Yolanda Lehman of St. Cloud, Minnesota, holding her six-month-old son outside the Pepsi Center, agreed.
It's not just for us. It's not just for those of citizens of the United States who need Obama, but it's for the world. The world needs an Obama presidency because of what he represents, hope and new beginnings and working with others, grassroots politics. That's what we need right now.
This hour, On Point, we're talking with journalists from around the world gathered here in Denver about how the world sees Obama and America's global challenge now. You can join the conversation. International listeners, how do you see Barack Obama? American listeners, how do you weigh your presidential options for a face to show the world? McCain versus Obama. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Susan Rice, senior foreign policy advisor to Barack Obama and leader of his foreign policy team. But first, with me here on Radio Row at the Convention Center in Denver is Janine Zakaria, diplomatic correspondent for Bloomberg News. Janine, thanks for being with us in the Mile High City on the day. It's turning into a ghost town here. Thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
And with us is Cordula Meyer, senior correspondent for Der Spiegel, the big German weekly news magazine. Of course, Barack Obama gave his mega speech in Berlin just last month. Cordula's been writing from Washington for the past year, tracking American politics. Cordula Meyer, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also at our table this morning is Sergio Davila, Washington correspondent for Folha de São Paulo, Brazil's largest daily newspaper. Sergio, so good to have you. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So let's see. Cordula, let me go to you first. What do you make of this week in American democracy and the way it works in this week of conventioneering? You've been in the country for about a year. What have you made of what you've seen here in Denver?
It's a great political spectacle, and it generates tremendous interest in Europe. I mean, this has been a very big news story in all over Europe, and people are very interested in how the foreign policy of the new president is going to look like.
Sergio, how about Brazil? Are people following, maybe not this week, but are they following the campaign? Are they paying attention to McCain, to Obama?
Oh, they are following the campaign. They are following this week. Obama is a big, it's a pop star in Brazil.
Really?
It's crazy, yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's because of the you know, Brazil, it's the largest country outside Africa with African heritage. So I think Brazil, the regular Brazilian see himself or herself in Obama's biography. And
ethnically, they'll understand that mix in Obama.
I think that's the punch, yes.
I read somewhere there's even a small-town politician, maybe in São Paulo, who's named himself Barack Obama in Brazil for an election.
Actually, I talked to the newsroom in São Paulo, and they told me there are seven politicians changing their names to Barack Obama. Because, you know, the local legislation allows you to register your nickname. Our president... name is Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Lula,
yes,
is a nickname.
Mm-hmm.
So they all changed, the seven guys changed their name to Barack Obama.
Seven candidates named Barack Obama, at least their nickname on the ballot in Brazil. Incredible. Of course, his big outing recently was just last month in Germany, in Berlin. A crowd of thousands of Germans greeted Obama there for his July 24th speech, cheering and chanting the senator's name. Let's listen.
Thank you.
Cordula Meyer with Der Spiegel. What is that about? We saw that huge crowd in Berlin. You hear the chanting right here. Germans? Why? Obama? Why?
Well, there's several things. First of all, Americans, the view of the United States has deteriorated over the last 8 years tremendously. Actually, it's the biggest slip in the view of the United States in the world. So it went from the high 80s to something like the low 30s.
Less than a third of Germans looking favorably on the United States now. That is incredibly low.
Yes, and Germans themselves are very uncomfortable with it because they actually like the United States. I mean, mean, Germans and Americans, they are very similar in a lot of things. They are very idealistic. They want to be liked for it. So Germans are getting very uncomfortable with their negative views of the United States. And nobody could be more un-Bush as Obama. And so he has, similar to Brazil, he has really a pop star aura. And also people like his, they are not so much into his singular foreign policy positions as much as they like his charismatic, uplifting style of politics.
Janine, I want to hear what you're hearing in your reporting on foreign policy community and diplomats and others watching the United States. Let's hear Obama himself from that speech in Berlin, July 24th, before a crowd of 200,000. He called for greater international cooperation.
The walls between old allies on either side of the Atlantic cannot stand. The walls between the countries with the most and those with the least cannot stand. The walls between races and tribes, natives and immigrants, Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
Barack Obama last month in Berlin. Janine Zakaria, diplomatic correspondent for Bloomberg News. I mean, this is very big, beautiful, high rhetoric. But do you hear the international community looking at it as important, as substantive, as really promising a potential change in an Obama presidency from where we've been?
There's enormous interest, just to echo what they've been saying here, just to get a case in point. Here at the Democratic Convention, you had more than 500 foreign diplomats here, including more than 100 ambassadors from Washington. It's an unprecedented turnout. And I've been seeing many of them around town at these different foreign policy events, flooded with Obama advisors, flooded with potential top officials in the administration.
That's a huge number. I remember all the way back in 1972, I was a kid in Miami Republican Convention, and there might have been 50 or 75, as I recall.
Well,
500.
Yeah, I was in 2000, 2004 at both, and I hadn't seen a turnout like this, and they've been being bussed around from event to event.
Why?
They all want to press the flesh with who might be the future Secretary of State, Assistant Secretary of State on their issues. So they're going to lectures on everything from Latin America to transatlantic relations to the Middle East. Now, what they're listening for is, what is the policy going to be like? Of course, as you mentioned, a lot of high rhetoric in these things. Mm-hmm. Europe, obviously, very happy about his let's embrace allies, let's work together thing. You travel to the Persian Gulf, as I did recently, and talk to officials there. They're a little bit more nervous, a little more jittery about Obama's willingness to talk to Iran, work with Iran. They're very nervous about Iran. Mm-hmm. They want to hear more what he thinks about that. Go to a place like Pakistan. You know, Obama really striking a chord there, saying, talking early in the campaign, getting criticized during the primaries about striking unilaterally if there's a threat.
Going across the border
without
permission.
Going across the border, that's gonna make people in Pakistan upset.
Only something like 9% to have a favorable attitude to the U.S. anyway in Pakistan. So
precisely. So, I mean, when you look at it, there are substantive differences between John McCain and Obama, and the diplomats are trying to suss them out.
Sergio, in Brazil, he may be a pop star. He may be have this huge shine of celebrity. But what about his policies? For example, on trade, Barack Obama, during the primary campaign, said some very tough negative things on NAFTA. Brazil has benefited from more open trade with the United States. Do Brazilians see him in the concrete details of his foreign policy as attractive, advantageous for Brazil, or not?
Not really, actually. No, there's this common sense among Brazilian authorities that a Republican administration is better for business regarding to Brazil and the region.
Because of open trade inclinations?
Because of trade, yes, open trading inclinations and less protectionism in these issues. Obama Democrats are not so good in this sense. This is the common sense among Brazilian authorities. But I think that they are starting to realize that there's more to the game than trade issues. That if you have a hawkish administration or a hawkish person in the White House, it's going to affect the world and Brazil in this sense. So,
Cordula, what about from the German perspective? You said there's a kind of desire for an un-Bush, but in positive terms. If Germans are looking to Obama, being attracted to Obama, what's the expectation behind that attraction? What are they hoping for?
Well, they're hoping for more multilateralism, and he embraces that. So he really thinks that it's an important thing in itself, and Germans really embrace that. And they are also very much looking forward to... there were big issues like torture, and Guantanamo was really something that really upset the German public. And they trust Obama more to really change the policy of the United States on that. And then again, one important issue for Germany would be NATO and Afghanistan. And there, it could become really critical because I think the general German public just slowly realizes that Obama would want something back for the embrace of multilateralism and the embrace of the allies.
Maybe more troops, more commitment in Afghanistan.
More commitment in Afghanistan, more troops in the south maybe. So, and Germany would, I think, not be ready for that.
We just saw the big Olympics in China. China looked very powerful. The United States is by no means the only big power anymore. Does the U.S. really matter in the way it used to matter to Europe, to Germany, Cordula?
I think it does because the transatlantic relationship is tremendously important to all of Europe. I think, and of course, for Germany, the relation to Russia is really critical and important too. But I think it would be a terrible mistake to not look for a strong transatlantic relationship.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver in the Democratic National Convention. Tonight, Barack Obama speaks before 70,000, we're told, just next door at the big Invesco Field Stadium. But right now, we're looking at Barack Obama and the world, maybe the world and the United States as we head toward a presidential election. We're talking with journalists this hour from around the world, and we'll hear in just a minute from Barack Obama's top foreign policy advisor, Susan Rice. We've been joined by Janine Zakaria, who's diplomatic correspondent with Bloomberg News, Cordula Meyer from Der Spiegel in Germany, Sergio Davila from Folha de Sao Paulo in Brazil. Let's get just a sense of what was said, and quite a lot was said last night on the stage in Denver about the world, foreign policy, and Barack Obama's place in it. In his speech last night, former President Bill Clinton said, Obama has the understanding, insight, and instinct to be president.
My fellow Democrats, I say to you, Barack Obama is ready to lead America and to restore American leadership in the world. Barack Obama is ready to honor the oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Barack Obama is ready to be president of the United States.
Bill Clinton, last night in Denver. Barack Obama's vice presidential running mate, Joe Biden, talked about what he characterized as a kind of Bush-McCain foreign policy. He talked about regaining the trust of the world and how Barack Obama would restore America's position in the worldview.
Again and again, on the most important national security issues of our time, John McCain was wrong, and Barack Obama has been proven right. Folks, remember when the world used to trust us, when they looked to us for leadership? With Barack Obama as our president, they'll look at us again, they'll trust us again, and we'll be able to lead again.
Senator Joe Biden in Denver last night. Joining us in Denver right now is Susan Rice. She leads Senator Obama's foreign policy team. She was Assistant U.S. Secretary of State under President Bill Clinton. Susan Rice, thanks very much for being here.
Great to be with you, Tom.
In bottom line, Joe Biden says the world will trust us again, will trust the United States again. The United States can lead again if Barack Obama is president. Why? He's very popular. In Brazil, we're hearing this morning, you know, people are nicknaming themselves Barack Obama in elections. But what about his policy or his view of the world would engender that trust, would put the U.S. back in a position of leadership, Susan Rice?
Tom, that's exactly the right question, because this is not about a popularity contest. It's about the United States playing a role in the world that serves the interests of the American people as well as the interests of the rest of the world. Now, the difference between Senator Obama and Senator McCain is that Barack Obama believes deeply that in a 21st century world in which the nature of the challenges and the threats we face are increasingly transnational, meaning that they can arise from any part of the planet and spread to any part of the planet, things like terrorism or proliferation or pandemic disease, environmental degradation, and the consequences of climate change, the United States cannot keep itself secure without being concerned about the security and well-being of people in every other part of the world. Because these phenomena are global and because our security is linked. So Senator Obama recognizes that in the 21st century we in fact share a common security. And the best way to enhance American security, and indeed our common security, because they are mutually reinforcing and not mutually exclusive, is indeed to be thinking in terms of how we can invest in our common humanity. So how can the United States lead in a fashion that helps to prevent and resolve conflicts that kill people elsewhere? How can we be responsive to disease and to poverty and to other forces that threaten the lives of people elsewhere? Because we are asking for people and governments elsewhere to cooperate and work with us on that which threatens us most directly, whether that's terrorism, proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, pandemic disease. So we're in this together. That philosophy, that worldview, that approach is uniquely Barack Obama's, and it views American leadership in a fashion that is frankly quite different than the traditional Republican, you're with us or against us, it's good versus evil, black and white, because in fact that world, if it ever existed, no longer exists today. So Barack Obama will renew American leadership in the world through a series of policies and approaches and attentiveness to the real threats that we face here in America. We have left the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban untended to a substantial extent in Afghanistan and Pakistan. They are stronger, reconstituting, having rebuilt their safe haven, and they threaten us. They threaten our partners in that region of South Asia as well as in Europe and elsewhere. We're bogged down in a war in Iraq that had nothing to do with 9/11. And indeed, Russia and China and many other parts of the world have acted in a fashion that really took no notice of what the United States thinks or does, because we have been AWOL, focused exclusively almost on one country over the last 8 years in Iraq. So that's the kind of leadership that has gotten us into trouble. It's the kind of leadership we can ill afford to continue for another 4 years. And so that's why Barack Obama, not just as an individual and as a representation of change in the United States, excites. It's the fundamentals of his policies that will make America safer and indeed benefit others in the rest of the world.
Susan Rice, you're right there in the cockpit of Obama's foreign policy. Let me ask you about a case in point. You said Barack Obama will invest in common humanity. Hey, that sounds great, but when the rubber meets the road, instincts are important. We just saw what happened in Georgia. You know, it wasn't for several days there, maybe still not exactly about humanity. It was about tanks and Russian troops. On August 11th, let's listen to how the two candidates first responded. Here was John McCain in Pennsylvania talking about Russia and started right in on its treatment of Georgia.
Russian President Medvedev and Prime Minister Putin must understand the severe long-term negative consequences that their government's actions will have for Russia's relationship with the United States and Europe.
John McCain in there talking tough right away, talking about kicking Russia out of the G8, talking about getting international peacekeepers in there. Just a couple of days before here, August 8th, Obama was en route to Hawaii when he staged a makeshift press conference to address the outbreak of violence between Russia and Georgia on a refueling stop in Sacramento.
What is clear is that Russia has invaded Georgia's sovereignty, has encroached on Georgia's sovereignty. And it is very important for us to resolve this issue as quickly as possible.
Susan Rice, you were very critical of John McCain. You said he came out shooting from the hip and, you know, acting on ideology, preconceived notions. But what can we learn from the instincts of these two men in their response to quite a dramatic move by troops, Russian troops, into Georgia? What does it tell us about Obama, about McCain?
Tom, let me answer that, but let me point out that when you play a clip from one candidate on August 11th and another on August 8th in a rapidly evolving situation, you're not comparing apples to apples.
That is fair enough. The tape from Hawaii was too lousy for us to play. Yes, and Obama got tougher later. We grant you that. But in their first outings, there was a different tone. You spoke to it yourself. You said McCain was shooting from the hip.
Right. And let me explain that. But I do want your audience to understand that those were not comparable points in time.
They were not in the same day time frame, granted.
About 3 days difference. on August 8th, in the morning, before any detailed information was available as to what had actually transpired on the ground, because, as you know, the situation began with Georgian action in its in South Ossetia, and then escalated very rapidly with Russian incursion into undisputed Georgian territory.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Senator McCain came out very quickly, right away, and I used the term shoot from the hip. I think
you said he was very aggressive, very belligerent.
Very aggressive and belligerent, mm-hmm. And characterized the facts on the ground before we had the facts on the ground. Senator Obama, our NATO partners, and indeed even the Bush administration, initially issued more measured statements because indeed we did not know exactly what was happening on the ground. We knew there was fighting. We knew this was a conflict that had been simmering. And indeed, Senator Obama had been warning since April of this year about the threat of enhanced violence and conflict in Abkhazia, the other disputed territory, and South Ossetia. He warned about it in July. He spoke with his European counterparts about this conflict on his trip in July to Europe. So we'd seen this coming, and we'd warned that diplomacy had to be stepped up, that we couldn't accept Russian continuing to act as so-called peacekeepers. We needed a neutral force in there. Mm-hmm. But he, along with our European partners and the Bush administration, initially issued statements that called for the violence to end and for this to be resolved peacefully without characterizing initially who shot John at the outset, because that wasn't clear on the ground. Mm-hmm. Senator McCain had a preconceived notion about Georgia and about Russia, and indeed he characterized the situation and as it became clear how it was evolving, so too did Senator Obama, so too did the Europeans, so too did the Bush administration. We all are in agreement that Russia's action is illegal, unacceptable, and has to be met with consequences. But I think what it says about their temperament, Tom, mm-hmm. is that indeed Senator Obama, when he makes his judgments and decisions, will do so based on the facts as we have them. And he will not rush to judgment. He will not form his views based on preconceived notions or ideology. And he will surround himself with pragmatic, thoughtful people who don't bring to decision-making any personal bias or any financial interest in our in the issues on which they're working.
Susan, let me take advantage of this opportunity. We've got the Der Spiegel correspondent sitting right here with us in Denver, Cordula Meyer. Cordula, you've got here top advisor to Obama on foreign policy. What about the Georgia case in point and the responses of the Obama camp and the McCain camp? What's your sense of how, let's say, German authorities interpreted those two, and which they found more appropriate, more welcome?
Well, Europe is really debating sanctions at this point, and on the summit that's going to come up on Monday, they are really going to get tough on this. And I think John McCain in Europe is perceived as still thinking in this old Cold War framework, and so they are looking for a little more measured response, because people before this crisis, people were very, very skeptical of John McCain's very aggressive approach to Russia.
Susan Rice, what's your reading on Europe? Do they want the tough guy, hard as granite John McCain approach here, or
tough
Obama?
I think that's a very dangerous and false characterization. It's not
all right.
Tough versus soft. It's smart versus failed and foolish foreign policy, which has characterized the last 8 years of the Bush administration, and with which John McCain has often aligned himself.
Mm-hmm.
Any American president worth his salt will be strong, but what we have been lacking is strength combined with wisdom, and that is what Barack Obama represents. I think Europe is in the eye of this storm with respect to Russia and Georgia. And frankly, John McCain's approach to our European partners has been, shall we say, uneven, to say the best. In the run-up to the Iraq War, John McCain called our allies, France and Germany, quote, adversaries. Adversaries because they were not in the same place as the United States about the war in Iraq. Now, when you think of your allies as adversaries, when you cast them aside when they disagree.
The old Europe of Don Rumsfeld.
That's another way of saying the same thing, although I think adversaries is, frankly, even more aggressive language. You don't set the United States up to be in a position to seek and obtain the most effective cooperation of our allies when we have a crisis, such as we do now in Russia. John McCain's approach, he has been advocating for quite a long time, as you mentioned earlier, kicking Russia out of the G8. Now, if there's anybody who thinks that had we kicked Russia out of the G8, it would have acted differently or better than it has in Georgia, I'd like to hear from that person, because I can't imagine how you would argue that case.
Susan Rice, we've got a call maybe for you from Middlebury, Vermont, and Bill. I think this is Bill McKibben, the well-known environmental writer. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Tom, how are you?
Very well. What do you see, Bill?
Well, I think, I mean, it's a really interesting discussion, but my guess is that our sense of what the key foreign policy questions are right now are the things we're debating are probably not what are going to be the dominant issues. I'm pretty sure that the nexus of issues around climate and energy and food, and by now these things are deeply connected, are going to be the central foreign policy questions, not just for this administration, but for many of them to come. But this,
Bill, you've got Obama's top advisor right here. We've got two more minutes with her. What question would you put to her on that front about Obama policy?
Well, I think that the real question is where it's going to rank in terms of priority. We've started this this global campaign called 350.org that's really pushing hard for around the world to get some real strong sentiment leading into the international negotiations that are supposed to conclude in Copenhagen a year from December. But there's a big planning meeting in Poland in December of this year, 6 weeks after our election. And we're going to be starting a big signature campaign in the next couple of weeks at 350.org.
Bill, I've just got 1 minute with Susan Rice. Let me put it to her, if you would, and I appreciate it. The break's coming right up. Susan, we've got just a minute with you to speak to global climate and Obama policy on it. Bill McKibben, big promoter here. What do you say?
Well, first of all, it's good to hear from Bill. He's been a real leader on this issue. Secondly, Barack Obama will place a very, very high priority on tackling the challenge of increasing our energy security and climate change. It has been a centerpiece of his campaign. He has the most aggressive plan of any candidate in any party to tackle our contribution to global greenhouse gas emissions, capping them at 80% of 1990 levels by the year 2050. That's going to require legislation in Congress that we have to push for, and then we'll be in a position to lead internationally in the fora that Bill was describing, which are coming up quickly, and that means that very early on in a new Obama administration, these issues will be front and center. He's right to point to them, very high priorities and very pressing issues. But the world we live in is such that we're going to have to deal with crises like Russia, the reality of terrorism, the war in Iraq, even as we focus on these crucial global challenges like climate, like food security, and the poverty and genocide.
Top Obama foreign policy advisor Susan Rice joining us in Denver. Susan, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point live from Denver, where we're looking this hour at Barack Obama and the world, maybe the world and the United States as we head toward a presidential election. We're talking with journalists from around the world. We just heard from Obama's top foreign policy advisor, Susan Rice. Here was Joe Biden attacking the Bush administration last night for its foreign policy shortcomings.
I've been on the ground in Georgia, Iraq, Pakistan, Afghanistan. And I can tell you in no uncertain terms, this administration's policy has been an abysmal failure. America cannot afford four more years of this failure.
Joe Biden, last night. Let's take a call from Somerville, Massachusetts, and Josie. Josie, you're on the air.
Great. Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I was in Spain for the month of July, and so I just wanted to share a little of what I saw there. People all over Spain are really excited about Obama because he, as some of your speakers have mentioned, he's so committed to diplomacy and international cooperation, and they really see that as a positive change from the Bush and potentially the McCain attitudes of isolation and hawkishness and even bullying. So people all over Europe, I met Spaniards, Germans, French people, they're all thrilled about Obama.
And you heard it on the streets. It was that clear to you in Spain, Josie?
Yeah, people asked me all over the, every time I met someone, oh, you're from the U.S., what do you think about the election? In one hostel in Logroño, Spain, everybody there started chanting Obama's name when the topic of the November election came up. So
wow.
It was really an amazing experience for me.
That's a great snapshot. Josie, thanks very much for that. I'm, of course, joined here in Denver with Janine Zakaria, diplomatic correspondent for Bloomberg News, and Cordula Meyer with Der Spiegel, the big German news weekly, with Sergio Davila with the Folha de São Paulo, Brazil's biggest daily newspaper. Janine Zakaria, we just heard some from Susan Rice there, and you hear Josie's report from, you know, her hostel in Spain, where they're sitting around chanting Obama. There's policy and there's enthusiasm. What did you hear in what Susan Rice has to say this morning?
Well, it was very interesting what she said, but first I was excited to hear from Bill McKibben as a Middlebury alumnum myself. You know, she was. It was interesting that she criticized you for comparing that August 8th and August 11th clip.
Well, there's something fair in that.
There is something
fair. There was
fair
an evolving
in that.
Understanding of what was happening.
And she was absolutely correct. It took the Bush administration 5 days to get their act together. Condi Rice was on vacation mm-hmm. when this whole thing broke out, and they were really discombobulated in the
and
beginning.
And yet, there was a distinct difference in tone in the earlier days between these two candidates.
But let me tell you where she was. There was very interesting. Mm-hmm. They don't have their act together yet. Just this week here in Denver, mm-hmm. the day earlier this week when Russia recognized the independence of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, Senator Obama put out a statement saying Russia needs to be isolated because of this. At the very moment that two of his other top foreign policy advisors, Bill Perry, Richard Danzig, were saying we need to engage Russia. We need to work with them. We need to respect Russia.
You can't engage and isolate
exactly.
at the same time.
So right now the campaign, forget about August 8th and 11th, the campaign is still sorting out what the approach to Russia should be. And I argue that in the next couple of weeks, Russia is going to remain a very severe policy challenge. Here, you thought the discussion was going to be more on Iraq and Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Russia dominating the discussions on foreign policy on the sidelines of the convention.
Let's get a call from Batesville, Virginia, and Ned. Hi, Ned. You're on the air to Denver.
Tom, thank you for the opportunity. Job number one for the Obama administration, from my perspective, would be to send a message to the world that the United States' use of military force will now be in strict compliance with the Constitution. And by that I mean, since World War II, we have gravitated into a situation where Congress authorizes the use of military force by statute rather than by declaring war as required by the Constitution. And the use of force by statute does not authorize acts of war, and yet we engage in acts of war. This is the source of many, many, many of our problems, and this message would be a wonderful thing to send to the world.
Ned, thanks very much for that observation. Let me take it to Brazil, where we haven't had much American military action in your neck of the woods, Sergio. But what about the Brazilian view of American readiness to use military force around the world? Has that engendered in Brazil respect or something else?
It's something else. It's not good. You know, you mentioned before the speeches during the conventions. Mm-hmm. You know what's missing in the speeches? Latin America. Except from a brief mention yesterday in Bill Clinton's speech, nobody talks about Latin America. And that's crazy because you have 45 million Latinos living in the U.S.
And countries like yours becoming very significant powers.
Yeah, and we question how Obama's policy will be different from this administration to the region. Bush has not been very present to the region so far. How he's going to change it? To speak frankly, it's not clear how different it's going to be, if it's going to be different at all.
If Obama's elected.
Yeah.
Janine, how about that? With everything else going on in the world, Latin America tends to go into a back seat. Yeah. Here's the voice from Brazil saying, let's hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I think what's happening right now is the campaign is reacting to the headlines, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're dealing with issues like Russia and Georgia because that's what's in the headlines. Mm-hmm. Same thing on Iraq and Afghanistan and Latin America, unfortunately. Unless it's about trade, you know, the candidates don't generally at this stage of the campaign articulate. But I think getting back to the caller's question on the military, mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting. I think the Democrats this week, especially last night, really tried to cut not a militaristic pose, but to show that they would have national security credentials. They feel they didn't do a good job on this in 2004. They rolled out military veterans. You had John Kerry, other people talking about how we will be ready to use force when necessary, mm-hmm. but we won't use it recklessly. And that's mm-hmm. really the message they're trying to convey.
Let's get a call from Osage, Iowa, and Sarah. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hey, I have met Joe Biden. I was his Mitchell County chair. This guy knows exactly what he's doing. He's a perfect balance for Obama's youth and arrogance, and I feel that Joe Biden, I trust Joe Biden with my kid's life.
Does he
Obama
give you more confidence in an Obama administration's foreign policy,
absolutely.
Sarah?
Oh, absolutely. I was married to a Saudi, and we have absolutely no business being in the Middle East. I know some of the men that are running that organization within the oil company there. And Joe Biden knows everybody. Everybody knows Joe. He is real. He is exactly what he presents. And I was very skeptical of Obama until he chose Joe Biden as his vice president. In fact, I was going to write in Hillary on my vote.
But you're comforted now by Biden on the ticket, and particularly on the foreign policy front. Sarah, thanks for your call. Janine, we were talking during the break about what's going on in the Obama camp. Who's leading? And you've got big Clinton people still in the wings from the foreign policy world, expecting, hoping to have an impact here. We had Susan Rice and others with us. Now, Joe Biden brings his own experience and yes. perspective here, but who is the team? What is the team that's emerging to be most important for Obama?
Well, that's what we're all trying. All us foreign policy watchers are watching. But, it's very interesting. You've got Richard Holbrooke here, who was a top Clinton advisor. You've got Madeleine Albright, and they're sort of doing like their shadow foreign policy seminars here. And you've got Susan Rice, and you've got Tony Lake, President Clinton's former advisor. But I feel sorry for whoever the next Secretary of State's going to be, because Joe Biden, given his experience as the Senate Foreign Relations Chairman, is going to be doing a lot of that out of the White House. But just one last thing. I think mm-hmm. it was interesting what the caller was saying about Joe Biden, because when I first heard he was selected, I thought that this would accentuate Obama's deficiencies on foreign policy, that
Why?
He needed to go and get somebody else to do that bag. He was being criticized for not understanding foreign policy.
It looked like he needed help
mm-hmm. on it, but actually mm-hmm. people have embraced him, and that was the sense on the floor last night as well.
Let's get a call from Ontario, Canada, Hamilton there. Anne, you're on the air to Denver. Hi, Anne.
Thank you for taking my call. Could I make, I know you're sort of moved on, but if I could make a couple of comments about Georgia and that. I don't like McCain. I don't like Bush. A lot of Canadians don't. But I'm sorry to say this. I don't mean to be rude. But a lot of Canadians, Obama scares the hell out of us.
Why?
His initial reaction to Georgia, he obviously hadn't bothered, to do any homework about what was really happening in this very important area. The Georgians weren't making an incursion into Russian space. They were trying to get back two of the provinces that the Russians had basically annexed in the 1990s. And I know this because my son was director of a special team, from Doctors Without Borders.
So you're worried that Obama just simply isn't well-versed enough in foreign policy as a Canadian?
Absolutely. I mean, look at that ludicrous tour of the East and Europe and that a couple of weeks ago, and he holds one of his major speeches at a spot where Hitler had held his speeches. The optics of that, do they not know their history?
Berlin was Hitler's capital, and it's the capital again. But let us pick up your point, and I thank you for it. Cordula Meyer with Der Spiegel. What about the way Obama came across as a presence, as a charismatic figure? He clearly worked in Europe. Anne says, how knowledgeable is this man? And as a Canadian, she's not confident. How are Europeans looking at Obama's insight, his real understanding of what's going on out there in the world?
Well, he has a totally different approach from the administrations before, because he is the first post Cold War president, so he doesn't look only at the nation states, so he looks at things Susan Rice talked about, terrorism, diseases going over borders, so all these kinds of threats that are not focused on the nation state. And Europeans feel really comfortable with this framework.
But even with that different framework, that different vision, you've got to know what's going on in those terms. Is there confidence in the, you know, just awareness, just global awareness that Obama would bring to the White House?
Well, I think Europeans feel very confident, and they feel that if there are deficiencies in his experience, he might have a good team of advisors to come to terms with that. And I think the real advantage Obama has, that he has all this goodwill, and that he can take can turn that into political leverage to really convince European allies to go with him. Because it was, in truth, it was very easy for the European governments to deal with Bush because he was so unpopular. They said, well, this is Bush. How can we say yes to him?
Right, right. It made it easy. I want to get one more perspective in here, if I may. Joining us by telephone from Denver is Aziz Hanifa, managing editor and political correspondent for India Abroad. It circulates in North America. He's interviewed Barack Obama and President Bush, traveled in the White House press corps. Aziz Hanifa, thanks very much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Take us right around the world to a little South Asian perspective on this. I know you write for a North American audience, but nevertheless, you're in touch with the perspective from India. What about Obama and the Obama-McCain contest? Can you characterize broadly how it's seen in South Asia?
Yeah, it's very interesting. There is sort of a dichotomy between sort of the Indian Americans living in the U.S. and mm-hmm. sort of the perception of Obama and McCain in India. As you know, it's very interesting that even with President Bush's popularity down in the dumps, down in the basement here in the U.S., he is very popular in India, and that's mostly because, in a way, he has transformed the relationship, essentially run with the ball after President Clinton went to India in March of 2000 and sort of transformed the relations. And a lot has also got to do with the U.S.-India civilian nuclear relationship. Mm-hmm. In spite of India not being a signatory to the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, Bush really pushed for this agreement. But at the same time, there is also at the same time the attitude and what President Clinton spoke about, that the U.S. In India and South Asia, they looked up to the U.S. in terms of power of example, and not an example of power. And the whole Iraq business has really dejected and disillusioned a lot of the people in South Asia. But at the same time, there has been some wariness because Obama, whether he's committed to the nuclear relationship, the nuclear deal, even though he's made it clear that he's not going to make any modifications. Mm-hmm. So in India, they look to sort of an extension of the Bush administration in terms of how the U.S.-India relationship progressed, and generally in South Asia also. But at the same time,
sounds like mixed feelings there, yeah. with partly leading toward maybe a Bush and more like a McCain line. But there's interest in larger themes
of Obama. And initially, during but at the same time, I think the fact that Joe Biden was selected as the vice president and the fact that he was the driving force in the Senate for this deal, I think probably has alleviated a lot of their concerns, etc.
Let me ask my guest with me right here, Sergio, if Obama's not elected, if he is elected, it says one thing, we've talked about that. If he's not elected, what would that say to Latin America, to Brazil?
Well, you know, Lula and President Bush have a very
Brazil's leader,
but the Brazilian president a good relationship. So I don't think in terms of the Brazilian government is going to be so different as to what it is now. I think they connected Bush and Lula because they have this the guy you want to have beer mm-hmm. quality, mm-hmm. both of them. So I don't see a big crisis in terms of Brazil if McCain is the president.
Cordula Meyer, in Europe, if Obama is not elected but rather rejected by the American electorate, how do you think that will be understood or received in Europe?
They would be totally surprised. I mean, it's what's happening every 4 years. So everybody was certain that John Kerry was going to be elected president. I mean, it was a clear thing for Europeans, and they were totally surprised how the U.S. citizens could vote for Bush again. I think there would be a sense of disappointment. But if you look at the foreign policy experts, A lot of them feel comfortable with McCain because he has, they know him. He has been at the Munich Security Conference quite a bit, so they know where he stands, and he is also committed to the transatlantic relationship, though more in an old-fashioned way.
And Janine Zakaria, this issue of restoring America's leadership, his position in the world, we've just got a minute, but the challenge is enormous. Do you see really divergent paths here, Obama v. McCain? Is it new versus old? Is there a consensus about which would be more effective?
Well, I don't think McCain rejects the notion of working with allies and multilateralism that Obama's pushing, but Obama certainly has put more of an emphasis on it. But issue number one that they're going to be dealing with, obviously, is Iraq. And there is where you see the divergent viewpoints. Obama pledging, by hook or by crook, one to two brigades, every combat brigades coming out every month, talking to Iran in order to facilitate this. McCain talking very differently, staying the course, doing what we need to do there, not talking about withdrawal, and that is where you will see the main differences between them. You'll see the differences on issues like Russia, Afghanistan, and perhaps Latin America and Europe as well.
Let's hope.
It has been a fascinating hour, and I want to thank each of you. Janine Zakaria, diplomatic correspondent for Bloomberg News. Janine, it's great to see you. Thank you for being with
us. My pleasure.
Sergio Davila, Washington correspondent for Folha de São Paulo, Brazil's largest daily newspaper. Sergio, great to meet you and have you with us here in Denver.
Thank you, Tom.
And Cordula Meyer, senior correspondent for Der Spiegel, Germany's big weekly news magazine, stationed these days in Washington. Cordula, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back tonight with Barack Obama in the big stadium. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.